Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Welcome to the Fluence Forum, a critical conversation on a timely topic on WCCO Radio. I'm your host, Blois Olson. And today we're coming to you from Hamline University, and we're going to talk about the census. And joining me now is Fannie Miller, President of Hamline. Thanks for joining me.
Thank you.
Hamline's putting a lot of effort into making sure the census is engaged and active amongst your students. Why is the census so important this year?
Well, it's important. The census is important for a variety of reasons. One, we want to make sure that we have the representation that our students and our community deserves. And so we want to make sure that all of our students and people, all people, are counted. We also want to make sure that those who see themselves as marginalized to some extent realize that they too must be counted. At Hamline University, we practice all the time that we are members of a civil society. So we want our students to model what that means, and what that means is being counted, being included, making sure their voice is heard.
One of the things that Hamline is known for is high civic engagement and voting, and it really is part of your core values that make sure that students understand that they're not only are they students here, but they're engaged, right?
Yes. Yes. That's really important to us. We don't want students to see themselves as separate from the community, but very much a part of the community, which being a part of the community means participating in every possible way. It means voting. It means getting involved in the activities that are in the community, in the city, in the state. It means voting. It means being counted. It means all those kinds of things, because we think that if you understand and appreciate what it means to be a civil member of a civil society, you will be a better parent. You will be a better student. You will be a better citizen. You'll be a better person overall. You are contributing to the overall economic development of our state and of our nation.
Well, President Miller, thanks for hosting us tonight. And as we go forward, are there any kind of final words about Hamline you want to make sure the community understands of Minnesota's oldest university and its standing here?
Well, I'm glad you mentioned that we are the oldest university in Minnesota, and that people understand that University Avenue is named after Hamline. People probably don't know that, which also signifies who we are. But this is an institution where when we talk about John Wesley and we say, do all the good you can, we mean that. Those are not simply words to us. Those are things that we internalize and we act on, that we believe that it is part of our DNA, it's part of who we are, to be participants, to do something for the good of others, to serve. And so that's who we are.
President Fannie Miller, thanks for joining us. And we're going to have three panels. And when we come back, we'll start off with the first panel. Thank you.
Well, thank you.
Welcome back to the Fluence Forum. Tonight, we're talking about the census from Hamline University. I'm Blois Olson, your host. Joining me now for the conversation is Andrew Verdon, the Minnesota Census Director, Adrian Falcon from Metro State University, and Hamline student Ray Doss. Thanks for joining me.
Thank you. Thank
Thanks
you.
For having us.
Andrew, as you're directing the census in Minnesota, what is the process, and how does 2020 look as far as the census and dynamics compared to other census?
Well, that's a great question. So I look at this as there's like three legs to the stool. You've got the Federal Census Bureau, which actually is in charge of doing the count, the one that has the offices and trains the people and hires and supervises the people doing the count. There's the state of Minnesota, of which I'm a part, through the State Demographic Center. And we're kind of working the grass tops, if you want to use that term.
Okay.
So working with like state elected officials, working with state agencies, working with constitutional officers, working with cities, counties, and such. And then there's our nonprofit partners who are kind of working the grassroots, as it were. So this is a three-legged stool, very important that all three elements are each doing their own work as well as communicating with each other. This is indeed a very different census. In fact, people who have worked on censuses before will tell you that no two censuses are alike. I worked on the census in 2010 for the Census Bureau itself, and it was a very different time. It was a different time politically. The economy was very different. The census was actually better funded in 2010.
Okay.
Perhaps the census wasn't as controversial in 2010. So that's a big difference, which is creating some additional challenges for all three legs of the stool this time.
One of the reasons we're at Hamline is because there is a big push to make sure that college students count. And Adrian Falcon from Metro State, talk about how you've looked at this and how we're kind of taking a pretty unique approach to making sure college students are counted in Minnesota.
Great. Well, thank you for that good question. This work really came about because young people are one of the highest undercounted groups. So they are historically undercounted, and it's the pattern that we see in voting, which is why the work that Hamline is doing as well is so important. And what is happening, I began to do this work in part because I was told college students are counted in their dorms, and that assumes that all college students live in dorms. And in fact, that's a total mistake in this day and age. Where I teach at Metro State, 11,000 students do not live in dorms. So unless we do work through college campuses, how are we going to educate and mobilize students? So that's really one of the issues. And given that being a renter is another huge indicator of being undercounted, many college students are renters. So how do we come together and use this approach to reach out to historically undercounted groups and do so in a way that both educates and mobilizes them so that we have the future citizens?
Ray Doss, you're a student here at Hamline. I know voting at Hamline is reaches very high levels. Talk about what students are doing here at Hamline to make sure that students are counted and how you're engaging with them.
Yes, that is a great question. So, like you said, Hamline has a really good response from students. This last election, we had 63% of our students voting. And this upcoming election, we want to do even stronger than that. I like to say a lot of the students at Hamline are very politically involved. So something we want to do is fold census participation into our Get Out the Vote initiative and make sure that a lot of students are voting. I think it's really important for students to participate in the census. Like Adrian was saying, you know, including college students is very important. Not to mention the census was created to ensure that all people are counted. And it has a lot to do with how our federal money is distributed, which includes a lot of different grants and financial support systems for college students. So to back that up, I think college students have a very, very important role to play in that, and Hamline students as well. So we are doing a lot. We will have a census encouragement day coming up on March 19th, I believe. We're going to have a census rally. And then me as a member of Student Congress, we have a lot of different initiatives like we have in the past with elections to make sure that Hamline students are participating and college students broadly.
Andrew, as you look at your experience with the previous census, talking about how this one's different, but you know, one thing that stands out is just technology and how we can reach people. Does that seem like a better opportunity, or is it like maybe a spam text message that everybody ignores these days?
That's a fair question. I think it's fair to say that it's simply a different technology, right? The fact is, in 2010, there was only a paper version. It was the 10 questions, short questionnaire. This is the first census where the form is going to be available digitally as well as via the phone, which is terrific. It makes it easier for, theoretically, for people to be able to participate in the census. However, we are all aware of something called a digital divide. So there are maybe some people who are on the wrong side of that digital divide. Perhaps they don't have broadband service in their neighborhood or in their town. Maybe they don't have computer access at home, or maybe they don't do the type of job where they're sitting in a cubicle and they're able to work on a computer and be able to complete their census form. So, I think the question to be asked is, of the people who did not respond to their census form in 2010, how many of them did it because responding to the form and having to take it to their mailbox was so onerous that that's the reason why they didn't participate? Okay. So it's going to be a very good experiment for us to find out how this works. I think the fact that there is still a paper option is helpful. But one thing to note with the census is that the census is not available in all languages For example, you can get the paper form in both English and Spanish, and you can get the online form and the telephone version in 13 different languages, English and 12 other languages, which is great, except two languages which are not covered include Somali and Hmong, which are obviously very prevalent here in Minnesota. The Census Bureau determines which languages to translate based on which languages are most predominant in the United States as a whole, not locally here in Minnesota. So those are two communities who feel like they are undercounted, and it's no wonder if the form itself is not even available in the language that you speak that you might not answer the form either.
Right. Ray, as a student in a diverse campus here at Hamline, do you think that people are aware of the census? I mean, it's not as prevalent as voting. But Ray and then Adrian, I want to know just kind of how much education or knowledge do people need to understand about what the census actually is?
Another really good question. I don't think census awareness is as inherent as voting awareness. Okay. Everyone knows elections happen, but not everyone knows that censuses happen. So it does take a lot more effort to encourage that kind of participation for a census, which again is really important for college students. So there are a lot of efforts that need to be done in that realm to make sure that people are aware of this thing that happens every 10 years and make sure that they are participating.
Adrian, what is it about the census that, I mean, you teach civic engagement, but you're around a college campus. Mm-hmm. And especially as you think about new citizens or new new immigrants, not just the barrier, but understanding what the census is and what it means. Is that a barrier?
So I think it's a barrier for immigrants, for new folks, but for all folks, for young folks growing up, where and how do you learn about this? And so we have done some research trying to understand what college students know.
Okay.
And we've done surveys across the state through the networks of higher ed.
Yeah.
And what we have found is that only 30% of students know that they have to complete it by law. And yet it is required by law. So that's a huge education opportunity. And only 22% know where they should be counted, which is where they spend most of their nights.
Okay.
And so part of this is there's a need for a tremendous amount of education.
And Andrew, when we talk about it's required, but there's not a penalty if you don't fill out the census, right?
Well, that's a good question. Actually, technically it is. Technically you are required to fill out your form, and technically there is a penalty for noncompliance. However, the Census Bureau is not a law enforcement agency, and so they do not prosecute you for noncompliance.
Okay.
So that's important for people to understand. But to the earlier point, the fact that the census only happens once every 10 years means that there's a lot of loss of knowledge about the census. You ask people about, were you counted in 2010? They say, geez, I don't remember if
I
got counted.
I can't remember 10 days ago.
I don't remember where I was 10 years ago. I don't know what was happening 10 years ago. I think that the thing that impresses me when I go around the state and having these conversations with civically minded people in rooms like this is folks will come up to me at the end of a presentation and will say, I've been in this country for 20 years. I did not know that this was what the census is about. If this is so important, why isn't this on the citizenship test? Why isn't this in my civics class?
Yep.
Why did I not know how important the census is? I would say, and as I say to groups, I believe the census is more important than voting. Because to vote, there's a number of barriers. You have to be 18, you have to be a citizen, you have to choose to be a voter, and you can't be on probation or on papers. Whereas the census is literally for everyone. Doesn't matter if you're one day old or 100 years old, doesn't matter where you're born, doesn't matter what your status is, everyone must be counted. And yes, it affects the political side of things too, but it's important for data, it's important for financial resources, and it's important for your political representation, whether or not you have the ability to vote.
Yeah, we're going to look more into kind of the politics and what it means to the state and federal allocation. Adrian, is there any other kind of highlights from the research you found of, what people do or don't know or expect from the census when you surveyed college students?
I think we were also really impressed with how many college students say that they are learning about they're using the census in their courses, but they don't necessarily connect the dots to, if they don't fill out the survey, that data doesn't exist. And so we're really excited to help them make those connections with why they want to participate. And then we also do have some qualitative data from some dialogues that we've done. And going back to your immigration question, I think one of the really neat things about the census is that it can be a unifier, because it is actually inviting everyone to participate. And so in one of our sessions, we had three students, one who is African American, one who is originally from Finland, and one who is originally from Thailand. And they all shared how they had each filled out the census forms for their parents for different reasons.
Oh, okay.
And so that's a story that I hold to, which sort of says, how do we understand the breadth of diversity in Minnesota, and how are young people being asked to do this work? And it was at varying ages that they were doing it, but they came together across that experience.
Ray, is the data something that as a student you've looked at or you feel like will help kind of your point of view on some of your education?
I think it is something that would help a lot. I do worry, though, I don't think it is something that a lot of students are engaging with, which certainly doesn't mean that that has to be the way it is forever. I think that's something that could change if data were to be made more readily available and more accessible. But no, I don't think it's something that a lot of students are engaging with. But again, that doesn't have to be the way it is.
Got it. Andrew, as we kind of wrap up this segment, just talk about all the or a few of the initiatives the state's doing maybe differently this year than 10 years ago.
I think that given the lower levels of funding that the Federal Census Bureau has, given the fewer number of offices and employees that the census has, means that the state of Minnesota has to step up. So we got a larger appropriation from the state this year, $1.6 million, to much of which went out by way of grants, some of which was for our office. There's a number of technological tools, including a tool where people can text their questions in English, Spanish, Somali, Hmong. There's an ability for people to sign up to ask for information about the census. That we have. There's a number of videos that we have as well. I think that the coordination between the three entities is better than it has been in years past, because the stakes are higher this time.
Sounds great. Andrew, Adrian, Ray, thanks for joining us on this Fluence Forum. And when we come back, Lieutenant Governor Peggy Flanagan is going to join us, and we're going to talk about just why the state is that invested in the census this year. I'm Blois Olson, and you're listening to a Fluence Forum from Hamline University. Welcome back to the Fluence Forum from Hamline University. We're talking about the census tonight. Joining me now are Lieutenant Governor Peggy Flanagan, Minneapolis Regional Chamber President Jonathan Weinhagen, and Hamline Professor Joe Peschek. As we start to look at not just what the census is, but why the state is so invested, Lieutenant Governor Flanagan, this is kind of one of those things that was going to happen, and you came into office and had to get ready for it. How did the administration look at the census and getting ready for it?
Well, first of all, I am a census nerd, and okay. I think that it is really important to share that with folks in Minnesota. I think the census is incredibly important. We did what we could, as was mentioned previously, by securing the $1.6 million in funding. Part of that funding that I think is really important is going directly to organizations that are embedded in communities. I think when you hear from someone who looks like you, who understands your experience about the importance of the census, it makes a tremendous difference. So we're hearing back from people on the ground that those grants that we've been able to give primarily nonprofit organizations have gone a long way, and people feel like they feel like the investment has been really valuable. The reality is that the census has a huge impact on the state of Minnesota in a handful of ways, primarily funding. We know that for every individual, there's about $2,800 per year, so $28,000 per year in dollars that we receive from the federal government based on the census. So okay. That stuff goes for roads, schools, transportation, a whole host of investments in things that we all really care about. And then, of course, congressional representation, which we can talk about, that matters tremendously, too. But our Department of Administration has been all hands on deck, working super hard. We spent a lot of time at the state fair and going across the state talking to people about the importance of this. I am here because I am geeked out about the census, and I know how important it is. And I want to recruit a whole army of census nerds across the state because it matters tremendously.
If anybody hasn't been to the census website, there is a lot of cool data that doesn't just get updated every 10 years. But Joe, Lieutenant Governor Flanagan raised the idea of congressional apportionment and things like that. Can you talk about how the census plays into, you know, kind of the politics of it all?
Well, constitutionally, the census is called for. It originates in Article 1 of the Constitution and called for every 10 years, and it's used as the basis for determining representation in the U.S. Congress. Now, that also relates to our clout in the Electoral College. And Minnesota's been kind of on the edge in recent censuses. We have 8 congressional districts, and it's very typical in census years for some states to gain a few seats, a few to lose some. We've been pretty steady for several decades now, so there's a lot at stake for Minnesota. Of course, also, as the Lieutenant Governor pointed out, I mean, having an accurate count is huge for federal funds distribution. So it has consequences for our electoral politics. And, of course, I would put it in the context of very hard-fought, close election contests recently at the presidential level and at other levels, and also the Midwest and the upper Midwest being sort of battleground states, Wisconsin, Michigan, and Minnesota. So there's a lot at stake for us.
Jonathan Weinhagen from the Minneapolis Regional Chamber. Business has really stepped up. I know you've been involved nationally and kind of advocating this. Why does the business community care about the census?
And the business community cares for a number of reasons. You know, I would tell you the most important reason is this is a foundational set of data that is driving critical decisions over the course of a decade. We often talk about census data being big data for small businesses. It's just as important for a large company. So if you think about where a major retailer is going to locate a store or a small business is going to invest, knowing where people are, where that opportunity is critical. And we're talking about people's livelihoods. We're talking about, you know, significant investments that companies and businesses are making in our communities.
Lieutenant Governor Flanagan, I know that as an administration, you guys have looked at making sure homeless people are counted for various reasons, the indigenous populations. Talk about what you've learned and insight about those traditionally undercounted communities and how we can engage them and what they think about the census.
Well, I think, you know, so in 2010, I spent a lot of time traveling across the country working on this issue.
Okay.
When I worked for Wellstone Action, we worked and we trained nonprofit organizations to go out and have these conversations with folks. So I learned firsthand that, again, the people who are best suited to talk to community are other members of the community.
Okay.
So that's certainly what we've heard. In the Native community, we are the historically, of course, underrepresented in a whole bunch of ways. But in 2010, we were undercounted, and we were the population that was the most undercounted, if
okay.
that makes sense, the most undercounted.
Yep.
And so there's a huge push, of course, across the state, but also nationally to make sure that people know that they count, that they matter. And I think for populations like the indigenous community, like my own community, that frankly, I think too often government has worked to erase or ignore.
Okay.
Filling out the census form is a way to say, I'm raising my hand. You
yep.
have to see me and you have to count me. And our communities are of value. So I will be filling out the census form along with my daughter. I have mm-hmm. a 7-year-old little girl who every time I go and vote, I hoist her up on my hip and we, you know, fill out the bubbles and we talk about who we're voting for and why.
Okay.
When the census form, you know, we fill out our census form, I'm going to do that with my daughter too, because she deserves to be counted. And that is, I think, those are the messages, those personal messages about why I'm filling out the census form while you're filling out the census form, what's its stake and what matters. Those are the things I think that speak to people's hearts and minds. It's not just about data. It's not just about filling out a government form. It is about people being seen and heard and valued. Any time, frankly, where we hear consistent rhetoric about who is in and who is out, who is deserving and who is not, and who matters and who doesn't, the census is saying, I matter, I count, you have to see me. And I'm ready.
Yeah, I can tell.
I
can tell you're ready.
Farm.
Joe, in history, are there times when people being undercounted or intentionally missed or things like that played were played by politics? Because obviously this census feels more political. It's in a very partisan political year. But yeah. Historically, has that happened before?
The census count has been political historically.
Okay.
In terms of what questions are asked, the methodology. It's a contentious thing. You know, it relates to, I'm thinking of a class I'm teaching right now in my undergraduates, Who Are We? And actually tomorrow my students have to go to the U.S. Census Bureau website and retrieve demographic information comparing the U.S. to Minnesota, Ramsey County to the state.
Okay.
But to get back to your question, yes, I think particularly, though, I would say that the census has become more contentious in U.S. politics. And under the current administration, their proposal for a citizenship question really touched a nerve. And so I do think that the debate over how to go about counting everyone, what's the best way to do that, what to include, some of that is natural, but it also kind of reflects the contentious nature of politics in America today. There's no getting around that. The
right.
Census Bureau is sort of a flashpoint for that.
Jonathan, as you talk to member businesses, how do they use census data? Why is it valuable to your to the businesses? Not just making sure that we're represented, but what is it that your you know your members care about?
Yeah, I mean, they're using census data every day, and we often tell people that they may be using census data without even knowing it.
Okay.
And we talk about it being foundational. If you're accessing a database, whether it's paid or through a public source, it is probably, not probably, it is certainly connected to this foundational set of data that comes through the census. And again, it's informing all sorts of decisions. It's also informing the ability to make investments in things like transportation and where we, you know, where federal dollars come for transit, which is critical to our economic competitiveness and moving people around our system. I had an opportunity a couple of weeks ago to head to D.C. with the Lieutenant Governor's boss to advocate for a $1 billion investment in our transit system that is directly connected to data that the Department of Transportation is using based on the last census, which makes it even more critical to make sure that we make sure every single person in this state is counted this time around.
Lieutenant Governor, as you've been out and about in communities, do we feel like, you know, you're a Minnesota native, do we feel like we're better positioned this year to have people within certain communities engaged in the census?
Well, I think, you know, I feel confident in the work that our administration is doing and the organizations on the ground. But the reality is we're going to have to hustle because the federal government and the administration in D.C. did not fund this in the way that it's been funded in the past. So I am hopeful. I am optimistic. I think we know that Minnesotans love civic engagement. And so in the past, when I think in 2010, we left behind about $500 per person, which was a lower rate than other states because
okay.
we show up to do things around civic engagement. But I think right now it matters tremendously, especially to the listeners out there, to start thinking about this. What are the conversations that you're going to be having with your friends and with your family about why it matters to fill out the census form? And to really make sure that you're putting a personal touch on it. There'll be there's actually a powwow coming up in the next week or so, a census powwow
okay.
where you know folks are going to be getting together, and we're also going to have conversations mm-hmm. about the census. And I think meeting people in communities where they're at, that's probably the best thing to do. It's what we see is the most effective. You know, I'm a little nervous, but I remain hopefully optimistic that the people are going to turn out to be counted.
Jonathan, when you've gone back and forth to D.C., because I believe you went to D.C. not to just testify on transportation or work on transportation stuff, but also just about the census. Is there a consensus about the census amongst business leaders, in Minnesota and then B, nationally about the value?
There's certainly a consensus on the census amongst business leaders on the value.
Okay.
I think it has been contentious. We've talked about the citizenship question. We're behind in large part because it was politicized in a way that it hasn't been in recent decades.
Okay.
And that made business leaders who have historically showed up to help fund some of the efforts that we're talking about a little bit more hesitant to lean in early on. We're starting to see that break loose a little bit as we're getting further away from the decision and the forms are printed and we're headed towards that census day, but it's been a challenge.
So do your members Jonathan, use their channels to help their employees and others, you know, communicate about the importance of it?
Absolutely. Employers are stepping up to think about how can they engage differently. Our partners across the river at the St. Paul Area Chamber have established a Census at Work Day. So April 7th will be a day that we encourage folks across this state to allow their employees some time and access to digital technology to take the census, to participate. So I think what you're seeing is the business community leaning in a really powerful way.
Sounds great. Jonathan, thanks for joining us. We're going to take a break now, and when we come back, Susan Brower, the state demographer, is going to join us, and we're going to talk more about kind of how this all ties together and what matters the most in Minnesota. Blaise Olson from Hamline University with the Fluence Forum on Minnesota's census efforts. Welcome back to the Fluence Forum from Hamline University, where we're talking about the census 2020 in Minnesota. Joining me now is the state demographer Susan Brower and Lieutenant Governor Peggy Flanagan and Hamline Professor Joe Peschick. Demographer Brower, first of all, I want your job someday because I just think the idea of sitting around looking at trends and data would be really cool. But you kind of have to live with the data and the updates to the data from the census for extended periods of time, and how your work informs a future outlook of our state. How do you look at the census as your first census as a state demographer?
So in terms of the way that we use the data for analysis,
yes,
we've been talking about different ways that the data are used. We are kind of locked into how accurate the count is. It really impacts how accurate the data are for the next 10 years. We do get updates on different kinds of surveys on an ongoing basis, but even those updates essentially are tied to this one count. And so just as the data are foundational to a lot of the data sets that the business community are using, like Jonathan talked about, that's absolutely true for all the data that we use to understand our communities in terms of educational attainment and employment and disparities, all kinds of information that rests on how good this count is.
Lieutenant Governor Flanagan, as you think about that and how Minnesota is changing in the out years, the future years, are there some early trends that you're anticipating that the state's going to have to kind of figure out from a what's important, what's funding, where resources need to be?
Well, I think, you know, what we know is that Minnesota is changing. It mm-hmm. is becoming increasingly more diverse. And I think the census is going to show us that. Mm-hmm. And we need to make sure that we are working across lines of difference as we think about the kind of programming, the way we invest in education, the kind of policies that we move forward. So I think that's what we'll see. I appreciate the demographer and how she digs into the data and even more recently has been able to disaggregate a lot of the data even as we get into, so we talk about like Native American, that we can now identify Ojibwe and Dakota and start to look at some of the disparities there. This data can be a really powerful tool for us, but it only is as good as the number of people who actually fill it out. And so that's where I do think, as we were talking about the divisiveness in politics right now, the fear, frankly, that has been put into some communities about filling this out or not, that is the thing that we have to overcome right now in order to get to a place where that data is useful. The data are useful to us.
Professor Peschick, as you talk about how you're having your students look at the data, from an academic standpoint, and from what kind of questions do they have, what kind of do they worry about the data, what is it that students learn from the data that really kind of informs their education here at Hamline?
Well, there's a great deal of information that the Census Bureau provides, not just how many people, but family structure, where people live, income levels. And really, students can get a much greater understanding of the nature of society in Minnesota in 2020 as opposed to 1920, and how things are changing and how they might change in the future. So it's a very it's very important to have that information, and I've tried to incorporate it into some of my classes and get students who are not used to, they are not, by and large, census nerds, but to see that it can actually be very, very informative and interesting. And also for professors like myself in doing research and trying to come to grips with what's going on in this country socially and then linking that to politics, it's also of vital importance. But we have to get the information, and we have to, all of us, reassure people that this is a legitimate process. And it sounds like there's a lot of intentional efforts going on in Minnesota and also around the country to kind of, you know, reassure people, ward off fears, so that we can have maximum participation in this year's census.
Demographer Brower, what are your peers around the country looking for? Is there similar efforts in most states? Is Minnesota unique? And then America is changing, not just Minnesota is changing. So do you ever kind of look at other states' data to say, you know, this is where we stand compared to other states?
We do. I'll say in terms of the efforts, the census efforts that are going on, there really is a wide variation across states as to what they're doing. I think we started much earlier here in Minnesota than any other state that I saw. But there are states that did fund the census. California stands out as one that it has a large population too, but to varying degrees. Some states didn't fund any census work. So I would say there's a huge variation in kind of where people are with respect to the funding and also where they are with respect to the effort. Some are just coming on board now, and we're very close. We're a month out. And so we have some advantages in that way. And absolutely, we use the data to try to understand kind of how we are unique here in Minnesota relative to other states, and also just kind of how we've become who we are compared to what other trajectories other states are on.
Lieutenant Governor Flanagan, obviously the one thing that keeps coming up is the do we get to keep all of our congressional seats? How does that play in Minnesota, regardless of politics? How important is that congressional seat?
It's pretty important. I think, you know, frankly, as we risk losing a congressional seat here in Minnesota, that that is a motivation for folks, because, frankly, I want more voices from Minnesota and D.C., especially right now. I think we could use more Minnesotan representation, I think, is a good thing. You know, but I also think that as we're talking about this, the people seeing value in it, the folks who are often undercounted, we talked about communities of color, indigenous communities, but it's also people who live in rural communities, people with disabilities, folks who are homeless and highly mobile, who oftentimes we make decisions about folks from those communities without them at the table. This is when we talk about representation in Congress, that's one thing. And, you know, the census is about representation overall.
And Demographer Brower, as we look at that, are there things, are there data points that we will get this time that we haven't gotten before, or are there data points we've gotten before that we won't get this time that would be valuable?
The census hasn't changed from last time, but again, it is underpinning all the surveys that we get, even from the Census Bureau, but even that universities do.
Okay.
The data are always tied back to this one count to make sure that whatever they happen to get in any sample that they draw in any particular survey, that it's tied back to something that's a complete count. So I'll say, even though there are no new questions, it's informing all of the surveys that are happening across the land.
Yeah.
And whatever they're collecting in those surveys.
Okay.
Yeah.
Professor Peschek, you've been around this campus for a long time. You know, not that long, but, you know, a while. But have you seen, does this census feel different on the campus? Is this change in the student body different? How do you think your students today view the census as maybe 20 years ago?
I think there might be a little bit more awareness of the census and that it's important. As our student leader said earlier, there are actually attempts to inform students, you know, about this. I do a modest amount in my own courses. And again, I think it probably reflects that people sense how kind of contentious things are, and accurate vote counts really matter. They can determine a presidential election. The Electoral College is rather volatile. So it does require education in the classroom and outside the classroom. But I think students, among others, I hope and I think that there's some evidence that students are taking it more seriously this year. And by the way, the Census Bureau hires people and pays a fairly decent wage to help with the count. And so that could be another avenue of interest.
One of the things has been making sure in this tight labor economy that we have enough workers. Mm-hmm. Demographer Brower, how are we doing on counters here in Minnesota?
Oh, it's been tough. So the most recent numbers show that it's come a long way. We're still looking for census takers in certain pockets, and there is a map online that we can point to that shows just which counties. I'll say generally across the state, it's the northern part that is having the most trouble at the county level, but there's still pockets in the Twin Cities metropolitan area where you're looking for specific communities, specific language skills to match what the neighborhood looks like.
Lieutenant Governor Flanagan, as we wrap up here, I know you're a self-proclaimed census geek, but we're competitive here in Minnesota about voter turnout. And so is there a sense of competition amongst other states about making sure that we have the best engagement in the census?
Well, now there is.
Well, good.
Yeah,
I hope so.
I think Minnesotans, we think of ourselves as civically engaged, and, folks filling out that census form is absolutely a part of our identity. And that, I think, is what it's going to take, is for us to talk about this being part of who we are as people. Again, it's why I'm going to have my daughter sitting on my lap as we fill out the census form, because I want her to know that it is part of our family values and traditions that we fill these things out together the same way that we go to the polls and we vote together. It's part of who we are. So I'm ready to throw down and say that Minnesota will have high participation in the census, but I am counting on everyone who's listening to also be census nerds and to recruit other census nerds to be unafraid to be a little, not so Minnesotan as you're in the grocery store and other places and talking to folks about the importance of filling out the census form.
Susan, just as we wrap, where can people learn more? How can they get engaged?
So you can go to our site at mn.gov/2020census, and okay, we have all kinds of information about the census, but also information about how you can get involved and bring the census to your community.
Sounds great. I want to thank everyone for joining us tonight for this conversation, this Fluence Forum, and also thank Hamline University for hosting this conversation. And as we go throughout the year, we'll keep you updated here on WCCO Radio about the census. Blois Olson, good night.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.